Hey guys, welcome to But Why Though, the podcast, where we talk about the things in pop culture that people say matter and ask the question, but why though? So today is a super special crossover episode where we are going to be talking about Game of Thrones Season 7. As always, I'm your host, Kate, and I'm here with Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
And our co-host this crossover, Swara Saleh from the Beltway Banthas podcast.
Hey guys, thank you so much for having me on, and I'm honored to be a guest co-host instead of just a guest. This is a real honor.
Can you give us a quick rundown of Beltway Banthas for our listeners who may not know you?
Absolutely. We are the Star Wars and Politics podcast covering all the intersection between Star Wars and politics. We talk about real world politics through the lens of Star Wars. We talk about in-universe Star Wars politics using examples we have in the real world and virtually anything else in between. And I do it with my good friend, Stephen Kent. And we've been going on for about a year and a half now, and it's been a real wild ride. It's been fantastic.
Yeah. You and Steven are awesome, awesome. For anyone who likes politics and or Star Wars, definitely check them out after you're done listening to this amazing recap that we're about to go through, because I'm hyped.
And I can say, too, that they are one of the reasons I started listening to podcasts, so I'm a little bit fangirl in meeting Swara.
Guys, I'm blushing so much right now. I'm like... Y'all are too kind. Thank you so much. And I just want to say, like, I love But Why Though. I think you guys have fantastic discussions. Two of my favorite episodes of yours were discussing Wonder Woman and Spider-Man Homecoming. I think that there's some really great, insightful takes from all of y'all. And you also do a really fantastic job.
Yeah, I'm getting, like, a really big anime blush now. So, Adrian, as the resident Game of Thrones expert, do you want to take us through season 7?
Yeah. Let's do it, because I'm super hyped for it. It was an amazing season. I'm all about it. First, real quick, I just want to ask a quick question just so our listeners can get a sense of where we're at. Swara, what did you expect going into season 7, or what did you want to happen most before you even started the season?
That is a really good question. In terms of what I wanted to see most, I think I really want to see more of the degradation of Cersei, because she is a character. She's a fascinating character, but also one that I really despise. And I wanted to see Jaime really wake up to the evil that's within her. I think, talking spoilers now, like we really got that. Like, Jaime really did wake up to how terrible Cersei has become. I definitely wanted to see Daenerys, my favorite character, begin her invasion or her justful retaking of the Seven Kingdoms. And I was glad to see that pan out as well. In terms of other things, I suppose I did definitely want to see the rest of the Seven Kingdoms or the rest of Westeros wake up to the threat of the White Walkers. And yeah, I think a lot of stuff during the season that I want to see, we got. But that is also, we might talk about this later, that might also be a criticism of this season, because I've seen several commentators say, did they do stuff for fan service? Like, just like for the fans instead of like growing organically with the story? But overall, I liked this season, but it's not one of my favorites, and we'll discuss why later.
We'll talk about, when we go through what we're going to recap, we'll go through each, like, the highlights of the episode, talk about what you liked, what you didn't like about the episode. And at the very end, we'll talk about, you know, if it met your expectations and, you know, what you want to do for, what you want to happen for season 8. And maybe that is kill more people, like, of our main characters. What about you, Kate?
So I went in with no expectations because I was not watching Game of Thrones at the time. So if you listen to our Game of Thrones episode, I actually stopped watching after season 5. I refused to watch Game of Thrones. And then we were going to do an episode on it. And I heard that the first episode of season 7, along with the end of season 6, was kind of a redemption of a lot of the female characters who had kind of got in the the raw end of the deal a lot of the times. And I just heard so many good things. I believe, Swara, you actually told me some really good things without spoilers, which was really awesome, too. And so I got hyped to watch it. And then I binged everything from episode 1. I was pleasantly surprised with everything that I got, but I can say too, it kind of helped going in with no expectations. Because I watched straight from season 6 into, I believe it was like episode 2 or 3 of season 7. So.
Nice. Yeah, I remember that conversation we had. And I think I said this during our conversation, and I'll say it now, that nothing can ever forgive what they did to certain female characters in previous seasons. I think the way some of those scenes were handled and the aftermath of those scenes were handled was very poor. But, you know, as we said in our conversation, it is nice to see how the female characters have really stepped up to be fully the main players and really driving the plot forward. So that is at least nice to see.
Yeah, and I think for me too, like I'm now looking at Game of Thrones, and what this season has kind of taught me, or like solidified in my mind, is that the same way you have seasons where you have a character story arc, something happens to them, then they build from that, like that's one season. That's how the entirety of every season is for Game of Thrones. It's one long story. And if you look at it as one long character arc, I personally was really like personally triggered through a lot of like the brutalization that happened to some of these female characters, but stepping back from it, like the way they were handled wasn't great, but it does fit into the overarching narrative, and I'm sucked right back into the world of Westeros again. I'm happy to be there. So
I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah.
as am I. For me, my expectations, just because I've been watching it since, you know, season 1, season 2. So my expectations of the show just go up every single season. So I expected a lot, especially with only 7 episodes. I expected them to just dump their budget into 7 episodes and eliminate a lot of filler stuff, which I never really minded the filler. I mean, my favorite show is Dragon Ball Z, and I love anime. Like, filler doesn't bother me at all. And this show really shows that those filler I'm doing scare quotes, like those filler episodes have payoffs later on in the show. So like everything kind of has like a purpose in the show, at least from what I'm watching. What did I want to happen? I needed Danny and John to get it on.
Yes.
I needed that. And so like by virtue, I needed that too. Yeah. I needed them to confirm R plus L equals J, which they, you know, do. So that was my big thing, and I needed more White Walker stuff to happen in the show. We'll talk about if I got everything I wanted a little bit later on. My second question, which you kind of already answered a little bit, favorite characters. My favorite character is John. I love John. That's my dude. Favorite character going in and favorite character going out of season 7 is still John. The dude is just solid and straightforward throughout, and characters I don't like at the start and still don't like is still Bran. I still hate Bran. This season made me do nothing for me to like Bran throughout the entire season. Characters you don't like, Shwar?
Yeah, honestly, I have to agree with you strongly there about Bran. You know, I did really like his story in the past couple of seasons, you know, because I mean, I liked it in conjunction with Hodor, with those siblings he was traveling with I liked you know, his journey to get to the Three-Eyed Raven, but coming out of that, he's just become a pretentious brat. Know-it-all brat, exactly, who just like doesn't seem to be like really actively helpful. He just seems to be now more like a robot, because I forget who said this exactly. It might have been, I think it was someone on Collider, maybe John Rocha, who said that Bran is not a character anymore. He's a plot device. He's just there to like expose information. And that's honestly not compelling.
Or make Bran, trauma.
Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there, I promise.
Sorry. I said, or make characters relive their trauma.
That was so stupid. That was... Oh. Like, dude, this is your sister. You do not remind your sister of stuff like that. That is... I mean, it's just wildly insensitive, I feel.
We'll get there when we go through the episodes.
I couldn't contain it.
It's okay, Kate. But I will say that another character I really didn't like this season, and I'm really glad to see his comeuppance, was Littlefinger. Because he was just like, you know, I liked him, again, liked him in previous seasons. I thought he was a really great master manipulator and someone who, even though he was basically evil, trying to get everything for himself, was still inspirational in how he was able to, you know, wrangle his way towards the top. You know, chaos is a ladder. He kind of reminds me of my favorite villain of all time, Emperor Palpatine, in that regard. But the thing is...
Blasphemous.
Like, I'm just saying, he almost reminded me of that. But no, this season he went like way down and just seems to, like, this whole, if I can talk about characters and plot lines I didn't like, this Arya Sansa conflict, what? It just made no sense. This is not how the characters would act even.
It's okay, we'll get there. We'll get there, I promise.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I don't think I liked Arya very much this season until the end. At least I didn't like Arya at Winterfell until the last episode, when again, she was like abusing Sansa verbally for no reason but to make drama for people to look at. And in terms of my favorite characters, still Daenerys. She's still my hero, still my queen. And as exemplified by her noble decision to take the fight to the north to defeat the White Walkers, even though there is some personal motivation in that as well with the loss of Viserion, she genuinely wants to do good and justice in the world. And I just love Daenerys so much. And I love that she got on with Jon.
Oh, John got on her. Yeah. Kate, real quick before we go into the episodes.
Yeah, so who I was totally rooting for and loved going in with Sansa. I know we have our personal Sansa disagreements, Adrian, from the Game of Thrones episode, but I was really looking forward to Sansa. Kind of along your line, I didn't like her in the middle of the season, but I came out liking her at the end. Still, I think she's really grown into her own. And so far as characters I didn't like, friggin' Bran. Yeah. He was useless.
Just useless.
On the side note, the OTP is Tormund and Brienne. And I'm just going to keep saying that because that I honestly looked for all those little bright spots and I want them to make giant babies and take over the world. So.
Little monster babies, yeah.
Yep.
All right, so let's go into recapping some of these episodes and just kind of like the overall season. Before we get into that, I just wanted, because I think it's important to note just like how successful this season was in terms of the show in general. So as of right now, at the time of this recording, because we don't have like the full numbers from the season finale, it averaged about 31 million viewers across all platforms.
Wow.
Per episode. That's like with like replays, that's with HBO Go, HBO Now, first-time viewers and things like that. That's up 34% from last season, and last season was huge.
That explains the buffering.
Yeah.
You guys had that problem too during the last episode, in the middle.
Yep. It cut out in the middle.
I'd be so pissed because I just watched it live on HBO. I couldn't handle that episode with buffering. Topped its own first-day viewership four times. So episode one set a new record, episode four set a new record, episode five set a new record, and then the season finale kind of just blew everything out of the water. Season finale viewership jumped from 8.9 million in season six to 12.1, and that's just like HBO. That's not factoring in the HBO streaming services. I think with like the streaming services on day one, it was like 16 million or something like that.
Yeah. Plus pirated.
Yeah, that doesn't even include pirated.
If you factor in pirated, I bet.
That's what I'm saying. Like it, and I think even with all of the leaks, it still averaged like this kind of viewership with only seven episodes and with widespread leaks. I think that's super great and indicative of how good this show is. I'm a firm believer that this is one of the best shows ever, and definitely one of the best shows on TV right now. If you gotten this far and you're trying to figure out if you want to watch the show or not, stop listening to right now and go watch Game of Thrones start to finish, because now you have seven seasons to binge. So we'll start with episode one. I'll kind of hit the main points that at least I think were the main points in the episode, and we'll talk a little bit about it very briefly, Kate, and then we'll move on into the next one. So the first episode, Dragonstone, has I believe the only cold open in Game of Thrones. I couldn't think of any other cold opens.
I think there have been others. Like the first season had a cold open, like the coldest of opens with like those knights getting
White
Walker.
Yeah, and this cold open has Arya poisoning literally the entire Frey family. I thought it was baller. I thought it was a great way to start the show, especially how season 6 ended. You have Jon learning that Dragonglass, setting up sexual tension with Dany later on. Arya is on her way to go kill Cersei, but runs into Ed Sheeran and some Lannisters. Euron Greyjoy meets Cersei and kind of comes with like his like Hollister new getup kind of thing. I thought his outfit changed from season 6 to season 7 was really weird. And then Dany gets a Dragonstone, and it's like a really powerful scene. She says nothing. She just tears down the Baratheon banner, and that was the end of the episode. Thoughts on the episode?
Personally, I loved Arya. I loved the guy who plays Frey playing Arya. Like, I don't know why. Like, that was just, it was awesome. So, like, what I did was I actually went back and watched Walder Frey in another episode to compare it. And, like, it is that dude actually acting like Arya.
Right.
Acting like him. Like, it was actually insane. Plus, I just loved her monologue because it just spoke to, as much as I don't like the Starks because I think they're stupid.
Agreed.
It showed the power of the Starks. Like, you don't leave one wolf alive. Like, you can't do that. Like, if you leave one wolf alive, it's going to come for you. And that just kind of showed for, and for me, I think it put the fact that you can still be of the loyal House Stark and still seek as much vengeance as any of the other houses in the series. So, and it was badass.
Yeah.
Like, she killed the entire hall.
Yeah, that was my big takeaway. Like, as soon as I watched the episode, like, I turned to Stefani, my wife, and I was like, that dude acted like himself, acting like Arya. Like, how like meta is that? And I thought he did. That was my biggest takeaway from that episode. I mean, the Ed Sheeran thing was kind of weird.
Yeah,
because
I don't know why he got death threats for that. Like, that was, they've had singing in other episodes.
Yeah, the funny thing was that he was singing, and Stefani was like, "Is that Ed Sheeran?" And it was. It was crazy. It was so weird.
Yeah, I really loved Arya as Frey. You know, killing all the Frey dudes. That was awesome. It was very heavily telegraphed. I think you could obviously tell that this was Arya who's like doing this, but you still loved it regardless because they're getting their comeuppance. The Ed Sheeran thing. Now, my friends and I, when we saw that, we just laughed. You know, it was just like, it was just funny. It was just like, okay, this is a stupid cameo. There's like really no reason for this. But Kate, I absolutely agree with you that the backlash against it was way overblown. Like, basically Ed Sheeran left Twitter over this.
Yeah.
Because he was getting like so many threats. And just like, look, usually I'm a defender of like fans having criticisms and stuff, but this is like just abuse. This is just like some, if I may curse for saying, some assholes on social media, just like, I don't know, just like acting like worst dicks like imaginable. And
the only thing I thought was like, do you not remember the Bear and the Maiden Fair episode? Like, they sang that entire episode.
Yeah,
but that didn't have any famous pop stars in it. So it's like, you know, is that like, because apparently Ed, I don't even know this, like Ed Sheeran evokes a lot of strong feelings in the populace or something, because that's where our priorities lie. But anyway, yeah, I like this episode a lot. Especially the ending. You know, I love Daenerys. Love seeing her reclaim her birthplace, really. That's where she was born. And, like, taking down that foolish Baratheon banner and, again, reclaiming her rightful place. It was awesome.
I actually, for me, the most powerful part wasn't the banner. It was her touching the sand.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that for me was where I was like, this is really subtle. And it technically isn't the largest part of this, but that's the part that, like, I really like. Like Emilia Clarke can act the hell out of any scene without even talking. Like, that much I can say.
In Game of Thrones.
In Game of Thrones, yeah. Not
not Terminator Genesis. Yeah, no, I love you, Emilia Clarke. Gosh. All right. So we'll move on from there. We'll go to episode 2, Stormborn. So Dany listens to Tyrion and basically splits up her forces to not go just destroy King's Landing like some of her people want her to do. So she sends forces in different directions, and it turns out to kind of be a bad decision because she gets outplayed later in the episode, primarily with Euron Greyjoy intercepting Yara's fleets and basically destroying everything. And you, we find out that Euron is a thug and not to be trifled with, as he just just wrecks people. Mm-hmm. And the Sand Snakes get destroyed. Mama Sand Snake and Daughter Sand Snake get taken. And then we get a return of Reek because he kind of bounces out. Yeah. Then we have, we go back to Dragonstone and Grey Worm and Melisandre get it on. And I thought it was fine, but that scene was just like ridiculously too long. Like,
I loved it.
That was so long. No. Like, you give me that. I think in context, it was so long because you can only give me like 2 seconds of Dany and Jon smashing, but you give me like 5 minutes of Grey Worm.
So, my defense of that is getting it on. There have been very few sex scenes in this show that have been just about love. There have been very few that are about that, that don't really have any power plays added to it or anything like that. So for me, I loved that scene just because for me, I was like, this was a romance that built with no strings attached, no power attached to either one of them, and them really loving each other for who they are without their backgrounds or anything. Not that other characters didn't do that. I mean, obviously, John and Ygritte do. But we get so few sex scenes in this show that are just love, and that it was really good for me. I loved it.
That's a fair point.
Yeah, I really liked it too. I think that it was, like Kate said, it was very sincere. It was just about their personal love, and again, no strings attached. But I will say, I am still so confused about Grey Worm and his anatomy.
Yes.
I just don't understand.
I don't think we'll ever know. She knows, though. It is known to her.
It is known.
And then you have, and then we find out in last episode that Jara is somehow made it all the way to Old Town very, very quickly. And
like everything else in the episode, in the series or season.
Sam decides that he's going to help him get his grayscale away. And then you get one of my favorite transitions in like almost all of TV when he sticks into Jorah and it directly transitions into like the hot pie scene.
Yeah.
That was
really so good and really freaky.
So good. I love that scene so much.
That just like freaked me out so much. Oh God. God bless anyone who's eating during that scene.
Yeah, right. And then we wrap up that episode with Jon heading to Dragonstone at the, you know, bequest or whatever the word is, behest of basically everybody else in Winterfell. But Jon's just like, I'm going, leave me alone. Sansa's like, oh, well, you're just going to leave? Like, oh, well, you're going to be Lady of Winterfell. And then she stops talking. Yeah. And that was that episode. It was.
And you get Lyanna just putting everybody in their place, too. Again, because she's awesome.
No, we disagree completely on this point. I thought her advice was terrible and completely selfish, and we see later on that in the next episode that it was...
Well, I didn't say Olenna. I said Lyanna.
Yeah, Lyanna. Okay.
Not Olenna. Olenna Tyrell is who we disagree
I thought you were saying Olenna. Gotcha.
No, I'm talking a little Bear Island ruler.
Yeah, I like her a lot. She's awesome.
She's awesome.
Yeah.
So we move into episode 3, where Johnny. Yeah, I'm already combining their names for the next season.
Oh my god! Yes. Hold on, that is the most basic of couple names there is, though.
But it works so well. You see how like it just flows off the tongue there? Yeah,
it works so well.
Oh my god!
So the Queen of Justice, we have John. John and Danley finally meet, and she immediately goes to the bend the knee, which becomes basically a meme through the rest of the seasons. Bran finally makes it back to Winterfell and immediately makes it weird and cringy, talking about Sansa's rape. Like, we'll talk about it when I'm done recapping the episode. Cersei then, with the Sand Snakes return to Cersei, Cersei poisons the daughter and makes the mom watch. Then the outplays continue when Jaime attacks Highgarden and Euron Greyjoy's ships destroy the Unsullied ships while they're at Castle Rock. So complete outplay by the Lannisters against Dany and her people. Thoughts on the episode?
Go ahead, Sora.
Thanks. Like, this episode in particular, I really liked. except for like we mentioned before, the Bran stuff, because Bran's the worst. Yeah, this is the episode where Olenna dies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's like she's one of my favorite characters in the entire show, and just what a way to go out. What a way to stick it to the Lannisters, to ultimately have that satisfying revenge, to have tricked them from brutally torturing her to death. Just give her a peaceful, like, poison to die with.
Give her a nice old lady death.
Exactly. They gave her a nice old lady death, and she's just like, I want Cersei to know it was me. And as we see later, Jaime does tell Cersei, and I'm sure it, like, completely wrecks her, knowing that, like, she lost her chance for revenge. Yeah. Like, I think for Olenna, you know, like, she said last season that, like, she wasn't looking for justice. She was looking for revenge against Cersei. She wasn't looking for survival. She was looking for revenge. And ultimately, I think she got it, you know? And I think, like, she was able to empower Daenerys as well for the future to fight against Cersei as well. So I really love that.
I think for me in this episode, other than Bran, and I guess, like, real quick, I guess going into the Ilaria torture scene, or it's torture scene. It's like just the thought of what she's going to go through. I thought the sand snakes with the death of all of them were really underutilized, and it made me really mad because they were just complete punks when they fought. And I just, they're supposed to be the most trained fighters in all of the war, and they're crap.
I mean, sorry, if I can interrupt for a second, this is part of what I'm talking about with this fan service-y aspect of the season, because the most hated aspect of previous seasons was Dorne. And they basically said, okay, you know what? We're just going to kill them. We're just going to, like, get them captured and have them be killed because we know the fans don't like it. That's what it really felt like to me.
Yeah, I could see that. I do think, though, the way she does torture Ilaria by killing her daughter the same way she killed Myrcella, and then just saying, okay, now we're gonna feed you, we're gonna water you, we're gonna sit here and watch your daughter rot. Like, that to me was where you realize, because I mean, it's kind of been building from episode one where she doesn't even want to talk about Tommen, like she's just kind of completely cut off. And I think the monster that has always been brewing underneath the surface of Cersei is just really out. And it's out for blood. And I think that this scene, like, out of anything she's done, this shows the brutality that she's capable of. Because,
yeah. And the thing is, she knows the pain. She knows the pain of losing a child like that, and to inflict it in such a horrific manner, like, way worse than what happened to her and Rosella. Yeah. Like, just...
It wasn't just, I'm going to kill your daughter. It's like, I'm going to make you watch every minute of this. And to me, that was where it kind of switched on. And I was live tweeting this episode, I think, and I was like, this is... Cersei's gone. Like, there is no loving mother in Cersei. There is nothing really tying her to anything. At that point, I don't even think Jaime was. And then Olenna tells him at the end, like, she's not going to do good. Like, I don't know what you're thinking. And Jaime kind of, this is his first sign that he does realize that, but he still loves her.
Right.
So that was
this jumped off my, I still hope it still happens. This jumped off my Queenslayer. Hopes and dreams. Because, does he even know that she's doing this? Because he wasn't there when this was going on. No, so do we even know if he knows?
I don't think he does.
I think if he knew that he was doing this, I don't know if he'd be okay with it. Because he's... Okay, yeah. It's just messed up.
I don't think Jaime would be... like, because Jaime has been fighting with himself. Or he's been fighting to get redemption for every bad thing that he's done for Cersei since the first season. Like, since he was on the road with Brienne, like, he has been trying to get that back. Like, that piece of him that died when he killed the Mad King. And so I can't, like, I think, yeah, because I think you actually said that, Adrian. I was like, I can totally get behind him being the Queenslayer, because, like, she is going to be what brings him back into being the Kingslayer. And he's going to have to do it to maintain his loyalty to the realm itself. Like, he's gonna have to do it to kill that bad part inside of him. So it'll be like a really great, like, you have to break an oath to save your oath type thing. So
going into episode four, we're more than halfway done with this season.
Gosh,
How crazy is that?
As fast as the Ravens did.
So Arya finally makes it to Winterfell, and we get another Stark reunion. Reunites with Sansa. It's a little weird, a little bit. And then she goes and spars with Brienne, which I think is amazing, and solidifies her as like one of the best fighters.
So good.
Bran talks with Littlefinger and drops his Chaos as a Ladder line, and it totally trips Littlefinger out.
That was the only good scene with Bran this entire season.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And then Cersei teams up with the Iron Bank, paying off her debts. More sexual attention with Johnny. I'm going to call him Johnny for the rest of the episode. In a cave, because we know last time John invited a girl to a cave, what happened. Shows him some of the paintings with the First Men, uniting with the Children of the Forest and fighting the White Walkers. And then we get probably one of the best episodes of this entire scene. One of the best scenes is Dany flies in and goes after Jaime with the Dothraki and with her dragon, with one dragon, and so good.
Good.
I think just like the implications of what happened and just how they shot it, like they literally set like 20 dudes on fire.
Yeah, they were the most people set on fire in a single shot.
Yeah, like, it was nuts. Yeah.
It was glorious.
Also, I think that's
it
also
glorious. Dracarys.
I think though that's when everybody realized we weren't going to see a single direwolf the rest of the entire season.
Yeah, I was going to wait till the end to say this, but I'm so upset we didn't get one shot of Ghost. Like, where is he? Who's watching him? Like, they could have used him against the White Walk. Like, they could have used Ghost so many times in the show, or John could have used Ghost so many times.
John has never gone north of the Wall really without Ghost.
Yeah,
unless Ghost he got separated by him. But yeah, okay. Back to the Dracarys.
Yeah, but yeah, it was just great. You know, when Drogon is chasing, can't remember his name.
Bronn.
Yeah, when he's chasing Bronn, I like Bronn a lot, and I legitimately was like, who do I want to die in this scene more? And I was just really super torn. I'm pretty sure you weren't torn. I knew.
Oh, not at all. I wanted Bronn to die. I wanted that.
Yeah, I was like, I like him so much.
Nah, man. I wanted that like bastard to die for attacking Drogon. Burn.
I actually tweeted it. I was like, no, he can't die. I really like him. And then he wounded Drogon, and I was like, no, burn him now. But I agree with you. I really love him as a character. But the moment, like, I see, like, so a little bit into my psyche, I see every animal as pretty much puppies. So I saw Drogon as a wounded giant puppy at that moment. And I just got very mad.
Yes.
I wasn't as torn because, like, Dany, like, you're going to run straight at this giant thing that shoots a giant spear. Did you learn nothing from any fighting you've ever watched? Like, you don't go just straight, go zigzag.
Well, no, but I think this is what points me. So I actually had some problems when she first met John. I think it was an episode before. She sounded, you can tell that Dany is used to being one of the most intelligent people in the room. And mm-hmm. I don't think she was used to having people who know the same stuff she does. Because up until this point, she was the only person in Essos and, you know, in the southern area that knew the histories of the kings and knew all these things that she could claim. Granted, she backed it up with force, and she has been through a lot. Like, I'm not taking it away from her. Like, her comeback, she's like, I've been through stuff too. Like, that was awesome. But I don't think she knows how to handle that. And I think the fact that she did go straight at Bronn showed that she has this idea of invincibility, and she hasn't had to confront not being invincible. Because up until this point, she has been the strongest person. And she technically still is. I mean, three dragons, come on. But it's also like that ego is also what got Drogon like shot.
I think that's a really good point in terms of like Dany's arc this season, because she does come to Westeros feeling invincible and feeling that with her council, with her dragons, with her army, she can take it over. But she comes against certain roadblocks, and she understands the situation is much more complex than she initially thought it would be. And she is, as I think we'll see throughout the rest of the season, really humbled as well. And I think that's a really profound growth for her, like, to, you know, experience that.
Yeah. And then you have one of my favorite scenes of this is Jaime thinking he could end the war, much like, you know, earlier in the show, when Baratheon is fighting and like this kid thinks that he could end the war by killing Robert Baratheon. Yeah. A great callback, in my opinion, which is this season is full of amazing, amazing callbacks. But that's one of my favorite ones. And then he just like Leroy Jenkins it. And I thought it was awesome. And then Bronn saves him, my dude.
So I have some, it was a great scene. And like I yelled so loud and Matt like ran out of the game room thinking that that something had happened to me. I was like, what happened? I was like, Jamie. He's like, what? He's like, okay, no, I'm going away. But I will say this, and this is probably my hardest thing. I have a hard time rooting for Jamie because of what he did to Cersei. But he's still so freaking likable, and it like hurts my moral compass to be rooting for a character who's raped another character. It really, really like hurts me, but I can't help but have myself root for him because he has worked so hard to get towards redemption. And yeah, I also think that running towards Drogon was fueled by the fact that he found out who killed his son. Like, I really feel like that, like some of that had to play there. Like he needed to kill somebody.
Well, I don't think it was that at all. I think he just wanted to end the war. I mean, he stood there in the face of a Dothraki horde and a dragon when he easily could have left. He's just his character at the end of the day is just that noble, that noble knight. And he just thought, all right, this is it. I can just save everybody if I just kill. I don't know why he didn't just throw it, but I liked it a lot.
Yeah,
that whole scene was amazing.
I watched this scene like at least 5 times after it initially came out, like back to back to back to back, because I wanted to watch it from every single thing. And I think we haven't talked about them enough, but the Dothraki were bad.
Oh, so good.
Like standing on top of their horses and fighting and shooting air. Like it was awesome. And I had this discussion with somebody in my office. She was like, but they're savages. I was like, wait, no, they're not compared to, you know, I was like, they're like, they just fight a different way. They're from a different area. This is what they're used to. She's like, well, they rape and pillage. I was like, the Greyjoys do that too. Are you going to call them savages? Mm-hmm. That's the entire way the Greyjoys make their line. Like
that's how every war in Westeros is fought, basically.
Exactly. And so like my whole thing was you're actually getting to see these two styles hit each other. And for me, having studied a lot of like the political price of wars and like who's willing to pay those prices, like for me, this would just really showed that like the Westerosi armies aren't going to be able to win because the Dothrakis fight a lot in the same way that they're two completely different styles of fighting. One of them is just fighting to win without care for their life, and the other one is like trying to maintain this rank and file, and it doesn't work.
Yeah, And before we move on from this episode, Tyrion in this episode is, I think, all of us Tyrion was me when I was watching that episode.
Yeah.
So I was like, there's so many likable people in this episode, and I don't want any of them to die. And I don't think Tyrion didn't either, obviously. So I love his vantage point from the battle for sure.
Yeah, like without even him talking, like my heart hurt for him.
Yeah.
So bad because he's literally watching the only person in his family who's ever loved him almost dying to his queen that he's sworn to protect.
Yeah, those are his people. Those are the Lannisters. Yeah. Like this is people from Castle Rock that he's probably known forever. And he's watching them get burned alive savagely.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally feel for Tyrion too, but I gotta tell you guys, it's like, for me, this is what the show has done to me. Like, I do care about these characters, I do care about their emotions and what they're going through, but I still, like, want certain primary things. I want Daenerys to take over, and I'm just gonna, like, you know, I'll be thinking in my head, oh yeah, Tyrion, that's awful for you, but, you know, you're serving a greater cause. Like, this is what this show has done to me. It's just made me like just want things at any cost because we've seen such incredible moral depravity from basically everyone from the first episode. And I'm just like at the point where even if Daenerys went evil, honestly, I would still support her because I still want like her to take over everything. I just want Daenerys Targaryen to rule everything.
Can you just please go burn down the Red Keep now, Danny?
Exactly. Just do that. I would love that. Thank you. It wouldn't necessarily be the most politically smart thing, but the fan in me who loves dragons, who loves these majestic beasts, like taking over and roaming the land. Like, guys, I care more about dragons than people. Okay, like that's
okay. I cared more about the direwolf deaths than I did the people deaths. So
there you go.
Like, which is why where is Ghost? I need more Ghost. He's a person. He's important. When John was dead on the table, who was the only one there? Ghost. Okay, exactly. Sorry. So we'll move on to episode 5, Eastwatch. So it starts off with Dany burning Randall and Dickon Tarly in front of the rest of the armies that are left after the battle, and makes everybody else bend the knee. Back in Dragonstone, they come up with the idea to capture a right from north of the wall and bring it back to Cersei to kind of make her see, like, hey, chill out. Let's go kill stuff that that matters more at this point. Davos, one of my favorite characters, the Onion Knight, smuggles Tyrion into the castle. Tyrion gets a nice little reunion with Bronn, and they meet up with Jaime. And as they're leaving, we get Gendry back, the running meme from like season 3. Like, where did he go?
Recognized.
Yeah, which Gendry's finally back. He has a hammer. He's enabling his dad stuff. We get a nice little scene with him and Jon Snow. Like, our fathers trusted each other, but no, they really didn't. Then you get to like the game with Arya and Littlefinger and all that stuff with the finding the letter. But like, oh no, Littlefinger wanted you to find the letter. And then at the end of this end of the episode, you have the squad, as I like to call them, Jon, Jorah, Gendry, the Hound, the Brotherhood, and Tormund go north to go get what Dany asked for to bring it to Cersei. Thoughts?
I guess for me, I like this episode a lot. I liked it because the Onion Knight says, oh, you finally stopped rowing. And I was like, yes, that's so awesome.
but again, that's sort of a fan service moment.
It is. It definitely is. I could see, I actually saw a lot of, I guess, like the, it was a very memeable season.
Totally.
I thought it was pretty necessary. Like, Gendry's like a big part of the, you know, if you take out like Dany and John, like technically Gendry, if you go by like the rebellion from Baratheon, he's basically the heir. Look at like the Cersei situation. And they kind of just didn't do anything with him. He's a great character and they kind of just like let him go. And I thought the way they brought him back was great. Like making him
use a hammer,
like making him embody his dad. I thought it was so, so great. I also liked just the interactions with all of those people at Eastwatch. Like, I didn't think that they would all work together in like one scene. I thought they killed it. Like, everyone's like, all right, we're all just gonna come together. We're all vastly different people. And it all just comes together. And they have some of the best dialogue between each other in the next episode that I think is in any of like Game of Thrones. So let's go right into it. I think that's one of the cooler episodes of the season too. Beyond the Wall. We start with tensions with Arya and Sansa because of Littlefinger's plan. We'd mentioned a little bit earlier about Arya and Sansa getting into it, and Arya threatening Sansa with the Faceless Men talk. And then we go beyond the wall, and we get lots of fighting and cool stuff happening. Our heroes, I guess I'll call them our heroes, because like, is anyone really rooting for the Night King to win this?
No.
And then they get trapped, champion. And then they send Gendry out to go get help, and somehow he runs all that way and falls right at the wall. Dany then comes in and just wrecks face.
With only one of them being frozen to death without food or water, by the way.
Yep.
Yeah. Hey, you know. Logic. Dany comes in and just wrecks stuff with her three dragons and finally like believes that the threat is real. And the Night King just has this amazing javelin throw, just like the most nonchalant thug move I've seen in the show. He just picks it up like, all right, aim it up, dead. And then I like this episode a lot because we get, again, this might be like fan servicey too, but like Tormund almost died. I thought for sure Tormund was going to die in this episode.
I was almost crying, Adrian. It was bad.
Because his like shriek that he was, I was like, all right, he's done. And then Jon falls in some water and Jon almost dies. But Benjen Stark, I guess Cold Hands. I guess I never really called him Cold Hands.
It's pretty much Cold Hands.
Yeah. And he comes in and saves John. And then at the end of the episode, we get Ice Dragon. I really, really in this, when John goes underwater, I wanted Rhaegar to come back and pick John up so bad.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That would have been great.
I like that much more than like tying up like the Benjen Stark thing. I'd forgotten about him being over there already. Like, how did he know?
I think this is the thing too. I actually think this episode, my critique of this episode, because I think I've been pretty positive so far, is that this is the episode where I realized how bad the pacing is.
Exactly.
And I want to say this too, like, pacing is like this in a lot of the other shows. I think I threw some shade at Game of Thrones in our Defenders recap. But like, it's like that in a lot of other shows. But with Game of Thrones, we're used to the slow build and seeing what's happening in all of these journeys to places. And we're used to things taking time. Obviously, they can't do that with 7 episodes. So this episode really, really heightened that for me. And it kind of took me out of it a little bit.
See, it didn't take me out of it because they had to wait for the ice to freeze over. That was like a big ocean. Not like a big ocean. It's like a big lake of water.
And they all would have died because they have no water or food.
Yeah, and it's freezing temperature. And yeah.
You have the Lord of Light, and the Lord of Light kept them all alive. So.
Oh, my God. That right there is...
But he let his priest die?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, his time was done. The Lord of Light does no wrong.
Adrian, no offense, but I think that's what they call fansplaining.
Exactly. Like, that's definitely fansplaining. I'm okay with it.
Like, we have this in Star Wars fandom sometimes, like when you're trying to explain like an illogical gap or something. It's just, guys, I will be honest, like, this was probably my least favorite episode. I think there were a lot of really cool things that happened. You know, particularly in the fights that they had north of the wall, but there were so many illogical gaps.
Yeah.
For example, the Raven traveling so fast to Daenerys made no sense. Daenerys taking all 3 of her dragons made no sense. It was just like, and it just felt like the characters were making like stupid decisions, and there were like some dialogue choices that I didn't really like as they were traveling with each other. And Tormund as well at one point said that his king from before should have bent the knee. But the thing is, back during that, like, he was steadfastly against the wildlings joining, Westeros or something like that. And it just seemed like, again, a matter of plot overtaking character. Instead of the characters driving the plot was driving them. And about this whole plan to get the White down to Cersei, it's like, again, that is a leap that they took. I mean, there definitely is some logic in there because they need to have Westeros united against the White Walkers, but why would Dany immediately agree to it? And why do they think that Cersei, as proven with her insanity, would agree to it? And the only part, like, I mean, I won't say that I liked, but that I was very intrigued. But I mean, like, obviously my heart was broken when that happened to Viserion. He was such a wonderful, noble dragon. And like, but the thing is, I'm actually kind of grateful that the Night King brought him back. I know that he's undead, that he's technically not Viserion anymore, but dragons are magical creatures, so maybe there's some way to bring him back. I'm desperately grasping at straws here, trying to, like, to get Daenerys her baby back. And
I just want 3 dragon riders. I want Tyrion, Jon, yes, and Dany to jump on some dragons. That's...
Same here. Same here, totally. But yeah, like, again, this was just in terms of how not cohesive as a narrative this episode was. I just didn't really like it that much.
I will say this, like, I think some of the banter was forced, but I also really liked the banter because it involved my precious cinnamon bun Tormund, and he's my baby and I will protect him with my life. I just want to hear Tormund, like, talking about his crush and writing Mr. of Tarth in the snow over and over again to, like, his free folk friends.
Oh my God.
That's just what I want in my life. But I also think for me, I had actually – so I talk a lot with the Sipping Sisters podcast. They're also a pop culture podcast. And of course, their sisters watching this, they really hated this storyline. And up until this point, I was like, I get it. Like, I was the tomboy growing up, and my male cousins were the only ones that accepted me. My female cousins didn't. So, like, I totally get, like, the last time they saw each other, they were crappy towards each other. And Sansa made Arya's life a living hell a lot of the time, and really made Arya feel like shamed Arya for being who she was. And Jon was the only one that protected her and loved her for who she was. And so I understood the tension when they first met. But with that being said, they worked so hard to find their families and be together. It was at this point where I was like, I really can't defend this anymore. And this is just getting pushed way too far. I don't know what's going on. And this seems really pointless to any sort of development.
I agree 100%. Arya and Sansa in this episode, that was stupid. It was just illogical. It was not true to the characters or how sisters would interact. And I'll just say, Game of Thrones this season had maybe one woman writer. You know, it didn't have any female perspectives that could inform how sisters would actually interact. And again, just a stupid forced conflict for the sake of making drama to gawk at. And if it was an act, you know, as we see later, like how they get Littlefinger, if that was an act, then why wasn't Littlefinger there? Why don't you fight in front of Littlefinger or something like that? So it was part of the plan. Why have it be personal in between them? And again, like you said, Kate, it makes sense in terms of how Arya might have some residual hurt feelings from her childhood. But again, having worked so hard to get back to her family, she still loves Sansa. Sansa's still her sister. She's there to protect Sansa. Why the hell are you showing her threatening to kill her sister? It was bizarre. It was stupid. And even though we know the ultimate conclusion of the storyline, It was missing
those extra episodes to build it out.
Yes.
I don't think so at all. I thought it was fine. Like, you even said it yourself, Kate, like last time she saw Sansa, she was, you know, wanting to be like the lady of everything. And all Arya has seen since she's been back is Sansa, you know, being the lady, taking mom and dad's room instead of some other room because she wanted like the nice things. So like, why wouldn't Arya think that Sansa hasn't changed all that much without knowing like the stories and stuff? All she sees is Sansa maybe usurping Jon, who is, you know, her favorite Stark probably. It's like, why wouldn't like, well, they wouldn't, I don't think that after like all this time, Arya has held this grudge against Sansa. It wouldn't just go away when she sees Sansa hasn't changed all that much. At least she hasn't seen Sansa change all that much. All she can go off of is what Sansa is still doing. I thought it was completely logical drama in my opinion.
I thought it was at first. And then I thought it took a step over being logical to illogical, just because I was also like, so before we did the Game of Thrones episode, I watched from the start of season 5 up. And so during this, I was watching from 1 all the way up. And in the in-betweens, after she initially leaves King's Landing, she kind of gets over the whole Sansa thing and doesn't really think about her again in Arya's plot. So for that, I would say like it's not too strong of a grudge that she would be coming this hard. But I did like, and I like, it's on Twitter, like it's out there. The receipts are out there. I defended the hell out of Arya acting that way.
She didn't know that Sansa was like basically like even alive. She thought the Boltons had Winterfell up until like 2 episodes before
this. She didn't know any of them were alive.
Yeah. So like, if you know that your sister's alive and you think, you assume that she's going to go back there to be like noble, but she's like taking the big rooms and, you know, acting more or less the same way.
Cause but I thought the opposite side to that season
before, like I hated Sansa this entire season until like 3 seconds before like we stopped seeing them because it finally came around to it. Cause they don't really set up like that. They don't set up like that. This stuff is like a joke or like, it's like part of the plan at all.
But that's my problem. Like it doesn't set that up. So I feel like the end when they're like comparing traumas and I'm just like that to me, it was just kind of like, I can't really like get behind that. Like that was kind of pushing it way too far. But I do know that like when you have so little family left, like I think it touched on it enough that first one. And now kind of thinking back to it, and I rewatched stuff before we did this too, like it kind of makes sense because the conversations they have after that initial meeting are completely different in flow and tone.
I agree 100%. It just seemed that Arya was taking a step backward after finally understanding Sansa a little bit more after they finally met back up again. But I will say, you know, I think anyone hearing that this conversation we're having right now, I think the way in which we're disagreeing about this storyline, because Adrian, you're making some really salient points about like their previous conflict. But I think it was executed in such a poor way. I don't think the writing that went into this was really that good at all. I think the nature of our disagreements about this just shows that they could have pulled this off way better.
You're missing the bridge to tie it to their emotive experiences. Like you're missing that connection, but which would have happened in the background. Like, cause all the stuff they're saying comes from a real place. Like I knew you were going to like a lot of these scenes, Adrian, because Arya calls her out on a lot of the stuff that you critique Sansa on in our Game of Thrones episode. And Sansa like vocalizes, "You think I got our entire family killed?" Like they, and this, I guess, again, Suara is probably the fan service stuff for the people who've hated Sansa. But at the same time, it just felt like too different from what happened in that first interaction, at least like on rewatching it.
Yeah, they were pretty cold when they first met. I will say though, like they're like legitimately best friends in like in real life.
Yes.
So the fact that they're able to like even do any of this stuff like in the show, I think is really, really great. We're running longer than I wanted. So we'll move into the finale, the dragon and the wolf. If that didn't say that they were going to get it on, I don't know what does. So the meetup that
creepy Brandon
everyone's wanted. No, I'm talking about like meetup with everybody else. Finally happens. So everyone comes together and we get like so many like little mini reunions like in this. I thought everybody was gonna die. Like this is too many good feels. Everyone bringing back, you know, magic wiener jokes and stuff was just too much for me. So basically. They bring out the right that they get, and everyone is super scared. Quick side note, like that was like better than most Walking Dead scenes I've seen with like a zombie in it. So, so good. Basically, Cersei walks off because Jon doesn't want to bend the knee. Big surprise that Jon doesn't want to bend the knee.
She doesn't want him to bend the knee to her. She doesn't want him to bend the knee to anybody and just go sit in the north.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Like she doesn't want Jon to bend the knee. That's what I meant.
Yeah,
that's what I meant. Yeah, doesn't want John to bend the knee. Then Tyrion goes to talk to her, and they have this whole thing, and Cersei acts like she's going to kill Tyrion, and Tyrion totally calls her on her bluff. And they talk about something, which is really, really sketchy to me, even though we find out later that she lied because she comes out and says, "All right, well, I'll fight with you." But it really turns out that she lied, and then Jaime confronts her later about this lie, and then almost gets killed by the mountain as well, but Jaime also calls her on her bluff and walks off to go his own little thing.
To leave his toxic relationship.
Yeah.
That is what he did.
Go Jaime. Go Jaime.
Yeah, go Jaime. Then you have Rip Littlefinger. For this whole episode, I was like, "Sansa, what are you doing? Sansa, what are you doing?" And then real quick, Arya chops up Littlefinger, which is great. And I think this is a great moment to say you don't mess with the Starks, because as stupid as they are, they will come together and kill you if you leave one alive. They've been saying that since episode one. If you don't kill all the Starks, you have a problem. Theon fights for the right to go save Yara with the other remaining Greyjoys by like unceremoniously withstanding like three shots to the groin because he doesn't have any of that stuff anymore.
Which I don't understand because he was kicked so hard. Like you would still feel something.
Adrenaline. Sorry, I don't know.
It bugs me.
I don't know. I think like, I mean, I don't want to imagine like feeling that, but I know another it definitely wouldn't be as bad. another anatomy question. Like, yeah. Sorry, Adrian, continue.
No problem. And then we get a full confirmation of R plus L equals J in full-fledged flashback confirmation. And then Johnny or Danny, whatever one you want, whatever way you want to do
John
it.
Daenerys.
Yeah, I get behind Daenerys.
I still like.
And they finally get it on in kind of like a weird monologue from.
It was so Bran. Weird. It was.
But awful. I was like, I don't care. It's finally happening, so I'm fine with this. This works for me. The only thing that was weird to me was Tyrion like in the background, like looking over, like what did you expect to happen?
It was all weird. It was just the most like ridiculous. Like it was just.
It was wonderful.
It was wonderful.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, like, but that's the problem. I wanted to fully admire Kit Harington's amazing butt, but I couldn't because I was so creeped out by Tyrion and Bran.
Yep, I still like it. I can look at that. I think I like this episode so much because it didn't really have too much action, but it kind of like, it was the game again, right? It was trying to see who was lying, who was not lying.
Yeah.
You have the Starks being true to themselves and stuff. It was about the game again, and I thought that was a really, really great episode compared to like what we had in the last episode where it was basically just all Dracarys and White Walkers and stuff like that. So I really enjoyed this episode for sure.
when Tyrion's pouring the wine out while he's talking to her, Cersei totally hits me as the person who would poison her own wine so that somebody else would drink it and die.
Totally. That's totally her mentality. That's what I thought would happen. Yeah.
I'm just glad. Yeah. Go for it.
Yeah. I was scared for a second too about Tyrion in that moment. And, but you know, he's one of the main characters most popular on the show. So, you know, that he's not going to die, at least not, or I mean, if they are going to go back to their old thing of like, you know, randomly people can die, but they haven't at all this season. You know, the only one who did die was Viserion. And I think that scene between Cersei and Tyrion. So some of my absolute favorite scenes in the earlier seasons were between Tyrion and Cersei and them talking about their family. And even though, you know, they say they hate each other, you can see that there is a connection there and that Tyrion genuinely does love his older sister, despite how terrible she is. I remember there was this one scene in particular, I think it was in season two, when Cersei like admits to him that she feels guilty for having sex with her brother to have children and that she's afraid of what's going to happen to them. It's a really amazing, powerful, impactful scene. And Tyrion's actually consoling her. And I think that you get a little bit of that in this last episode. You see Tyrion say, "Hey, Cersei, I loved them too. I love those children very dearly." And, you know, Cersei said, "Oh, no, I'm not going to have it." But you could tell that she was very impacted by it, even though, as we find out, she was lying through her teeth about all of it, about, you know, being noble and joining the fight with them. You could still see how, you know, at the very least in that moment, choosing not to kill her little brother and really accepting that, hey, even though he killed their father, who was going to kill him, as he mentioned, still loves their family. And, you know, even though Cersei is an insane monster, she is still in a lot of ways a sympathetic insane monster.
Yeah. Well, see, and like, this is the thing too, like I have defended Cersei because I am so enthralled with her character. Mm-hmm. Like, I agree, she's terrible, but I respect the hell out of her.
Yeah.
Because she plays, and she's harkened back, like she has talked about it since the very beginning. Like, she plays the game the way she has to because she wasn't raised as a Lannister son. But she listened throughout those entire things. It was just, I feel like she was so calculated in a lot of things that I felt like for one of the first times I saw her truly blinded by something. Like, and I didn't like that because for me, I feel like she works out problems and goes for, and when I say the greater good, I don't mean the greater good of Westeros. I mean the greater good for her and her family, which I guess you could say her dipping is that. But at the same time, like, I think both Tyrion and Jaime present her with very logical arguments. Like, well, what the hell are our kids going to rule over? Like, if everybody's gone, everybody's dead. And I think you get a really illogical Cersei acting in these moments. And I don't like that because that to me isn't who Cersei has been or is. And I actually think she should have killed one of her brothers because of how evil she's made to be from episode one of this season. and how right. detached she claims to be from her family, from refusing to talk about her son's death, from like her entire talk with Tyrion, which I agree with. I love their scenes together. But her entire talk wasn't, I'm not mad that you killed her father. I'm mad at what you took away from our family.
Yes, and absolutely. So
that to me sets up a different type of interest than just like familial bonds. And so I think that she should have killed one of them. So I also like screamed out really loud when I thought the mountain was going to kill Jaime. Cause
yeah, I thought, yeah, I thought like Jaime for sure was getting taken out. But yeah. I really like that was probably one of the hardest decisions he's had to make like in this show.
Yeah.
Like stay with Cersei or go do the noble knight thing
yeah.
and keep your word. I thought that was insanely powerful because he was ready to just get chopped up by the mountain. Cause there's nothing he can do. He can't fight the yeah. mountain the way he is anymore.
Like I agree on that. I think this was one of the moments where we truly see Jaime. We truly get a big look at the fact that Jaime is an honorable man. Like he's done yeah. little things up to now to reclaim this honorable position. And it was one of the entire parts of his like story progression in season six. But with him leaving his sister and the woman he loves, because apparently twincest is bad, but incest isn't.
Hey, there are degrees of separation with Daenerys. yeah.
And they don't even know. Like, they know that they're, like, that's what, that's, okay, yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, like, you get to see him fully come into that honor. So.
Yeah.
And also, Bran is reaffirmed to me as being a shitty character and a shitty three-eyed raven. Who's at the yeah. door? It's Sam. Really? You're supposed to know everything. Why are you asking who's at the door? Like, it's obvious, like, you should know that. Or, he's a Sam, not a Snow. Well, actually, he's a Targaryen.
He's actually a Targaryen.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, how yeah. do you not know that? So I'm going to port myself back into a scene that I was in before that I never thought about going back to with my dad to find out what was said when it was obvious. Mm-hmm. Like, I.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's just a big plot. I got everything. I really did get everything I wanted out of this episode, except for Clegane Bowl.
Yeah.
I thought they set it up great when he, like, you know, this isn't the end for you. You know who's coming for you. And then he just, like, walked down the stairs. I thought for sure there was going to be, like, some big bow or something, and the mountain was just going to go down and fight
yeah.
the hound. That would have been amazing.
I thought he dipped at first, by the way. When the like, yeah. when he goes down to get the right, I thought he dipped at first. I thought he, like, pulled the ear on and just went straight out, but. He
wait, so who was Gregor referring to? Who's going to come for his brother?
Him.
Him.
Gotcha. The hound will be coming for him. Okay, very cool, very cool. Man, the mountain just looks horrifying. Like yeah. those eyes, it just looks like his face is constantly decaying throughout the seasons. Like, yeah. Jesus.
I like their face-to-face, though.
I wonder why, Sora.
I like their face-to-face, though, because for like all of, while, as long as Cersei's been in King's Landing, like since the Hound's been there, the mountain just towers over everybody.
Yeah.
Literally everybody. But we see him face to face with the Hound. You're like, oh, well, the Hound's a pretty big dude, pretty big guy, too. Like, that would be a fun fight. And I would love to see it. I hope they do it next season. Oh,
by the way, proud parents of Arya Stark, Hound and Brienne talking about her.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was awesome, where she was just like, you know, the person who needs protection is the one that gets in her way. I'm like, they just like totally like bonded over that.
That's what I'm saying. There were so many little moments in that episode.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah, there definitely was.
But wait, if we can talk about Brienne and the Hound, like, holy, I mean, she nearly killed him. And like now they're just like talking casually. I love this show so much.
Yeah. Well, because I like their reference to it too. She's like, oh, you're alive. Nah, almost.
Since we're about like an hour and 10 minutes into this, we'll wrap up with just real quick, did it meet your expectations?
I think for me it definitely did, because I guess the only expectation I guess you could say I did have was I was expecting the female characters to finally get payoff, and I actually think it happened in that Arya and Brienne fight, because for me it really pointed out that there are different levels of feminine and different ways to be feminine in Game of Thrones. And for me, that really comes across in fighting styles, because you often see females doing the, you know, the ScarJo thing and crushing men's heads with their thighs, which is cool. But it is also really cool to see a woman swing a greatsword. And so to have that acrobatic fighting style with Arya and to have Brienne doing the knight style, like that for me was like a little microcosm for what I see Game of Thrones as for representing female characters. Because they were both strong and you could see that, and they were both strong in different ways. And that was something that I really liked. And Ice Dragon.
Ice Dragon. Yeah. And I think to go off of that, Kate, just the variety of different female characters and the various different ways to be strong. And I'm thinking specifically of Sansa.
Yeah.
Even though, like, you know, she was part of that super frustrating storyline still overall. And as we see in the culmination, we didn't discuss this, but finally killing Littlefinger, like, yeah. You know, finally, like, getting that annoying character where she's able to become the manipulator has become the manipulatee. You know, she's able to turn the tables on him. Yeah. And
oh, and her line, I'm a slow learner, yes. But I learn. And like that,
I learn.
Like, yeah. I will defend you to the death, Sansa. I will defend you from every hate that people throw your way.
dude, I want her to be the queen in the north. Honestly, yeah. I think she's fantastic. As long as she fights against the White Walkers and as long as she accepts Daenerys as queen.
As long as she bends the knee,
like I will accept her as queen. No, but I will say my concluding thought for this season is, you know, I know it's incest, but Targaryens did it for hundreds of years. At least it's not brother and sister. At least they genuinely love each other. And I really hope that when Dany finds out, she won't be threatened. And that, you know, John, when he finds out, he'll be freaked out. I know, like, that for sure. But, you know, hopefully they can get past those scruples and understand that there will be a union of ice and fire that will unite the realm, and they'll have a bunch of Targaryen babies, and they'll hatch some more dragons, and they'll basically rename Westeros as Valyria, and it'll be awesome. That's what I'm hoping for.
That works. For me, it definitely met my expectations. I didn't say it at the beginning, but I really wanted the wall to come down. Like, I wanted the White Walkers to cross into, into where it's actually immediately a problem. And yeah. It did. Hopefully Tormund's still alive because he needs to get it on with Brienne still.
He's alive. Guys, he's alive. Yeah. He was running on the top of the wall instead of the guys who were running down the stairs stupidly. Like, he's safe. Don't worry.
Yeah, I don't believe that people die off screen in the show. So, like, I'm sure he's still alive. That scene, it was great. Definitely not my expectations. I wanted Danny and John to get it on, and I wanted it to be a fast-paced going thing. Like, it might have been at the expense of, like, pacing, but it's better than watching them walk for three episodes to get to the White Walkers, in my opinion. So I'm okay with it. I'm interested to see what they do for the sixth season. Eighth season with six episodes is what I meant to say. On that vein, what's one thing you want most in season eight? One thing. Just one.
Somebody else go first, because I can't do these things. I always give, like,
okay. All right. I just want Viserion to, I want Daenerys to work her dragon magic on Viserion and bring him back to life fully.
That would be amazing.
I know that's probably, I mean, actually, no, it could happen. It could happen. I'm going to hold on to hope, and then it's going to be dashed, but I'm still going to hold on to hope. Yeah, okay. So yeah, that's what I want.
I think I know what mine is. It's a combination of the Queenslayer theory and Arya getting her revenge. I want Arya to kill Jaime and then wear his face to kill Cersei.
Oh, that'd be so meta.
I love it.
That's what I want. Because it fulfills, like, both my things. Like, I mean, granted, like, I think I just want Jaime to die because I feel bad liking him. But I think this is the perfect way for it to happen.
And you're just using Arya because she's killing everyone.
Well, and she has the skill to do it. Like, come on, yeah, wear his face, true, get next to the love of his life, and then just kill her.
Obviously.
And do it brutally.
Do they do it first?
No.
Okay.
No.
It's not incest at that point, right? You're against incest. Anyway, the one thing that I want most to happen, I kind of mentioned before, regardless of all the other, like, dragon fighting stuff, I really want the Mountain and the Hound to fight next season, like, for sure. I need Clegane Bowl to happen to kind of, like, round all that stuff out. Because the Hound is such a tortured soul. Like, he has to wear that his whole life. The Mountain's kind of a a jerk and I want to see him die, like, for real this time. Yeah, that's all I got for the wrap up. Thanks for joining us. I'll let Kate close us out, I guess. Or anything last thoughts, I guess. I don't know. We can be here all night talking about it. I just want to, you know.
Yeah, like there's easily a lot of a lot of stuff that we missed. So when we post this, feel free to just jump in with your theories, what you want from season 8 and the things that you think we missed from season 7. It was a condensed season and there's obviously stuff we didn't get to talk about. Suara, thank you so much for coming on. Like, it has been a blast and a joy. And thank you for brightening up the day or night, because it's really late right now.
Yeah, it's late. Now I got to get to my local Target for Force Friday. Yep. Thank you guys. Thank you all so much for having me on. This was a real blast. And I really loved talking to you outside of Twitter. Like, now we can actually hear each other's voices. This is awesome. Yep.
Well, why don't you tell our fans where to find you? That way they can, you know, listen to your voice a little bit more.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you can listen to my sultry voice on... No, I'm not going to say that. Y'all can listen to me on Beltway Banthas. We're on iTunes. I host it with my good friend, Stephen Kent. We cover all things in the intersection of politics and Star Wars. You can follow me on Twitter at SuaraSalih1. That's SuaraSalih1. You can follow Beltway Banthas at Beltway Banthas. And if you're interested in... another aspect of Star Wars nerddom, I have a Facebook group called Sounds from a Galaxy Far, Far Away. We discuss all things John Williams, Michael Giacchino, and other aspects of Star Wars music. So if you want to join, come and send a request and I'll add you on. And those are all my plugs.
Well, once again, thank you so, so much. And I'm happy to geek out here with two of the people that I always like at all the time for this Game of Thrones things. Because, I mean, come on. Also, everybody out there must know that Suara literally only responded to anything I put as Game of Thrones with the Dracarys. That was it.
Dracarys. Dracarys. I want Daenerys to burn and rule everything.
I'm going to pull a little Tyrion, but what's she going to rule if it's all burnt?
She's going to rule. That's all that matters.
So as usual, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @OhMyMythRandier. How about you, Adrian?
Yep, you can find me on Twitter at SuperEase93, SuperEriuiz93.
And make sure to drop Suara and Beltway some follows, guys. Have a great night, and winter is finally here.
The night is dark and full of terrors.
And full of spoilers. We probably should have said that in the beginning.
What music do you want to go out to, Shard? We let our guests pick our outro music.
Oh, Boys of Summer, I guess. I don't know. Something with summer. Because I miss summer. I love summer, you guys. I don't want
fall. Come on over to Texas. It never ends.
I know. That would be awesome.